Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. Matthew writes, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him.' When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. So they said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the young child. And when you have found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also.' When they heard the king, they departed. And behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Then being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed for their own country another way." Amen. The Gospel of Matthew begins in the previous chapter, in Matthew 1. What's the first verse of the Gospel of Matthew? 1:1, it says, "The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, son of David." Why does it point that out? Why is the first thing that it says about Jesus, the son of David? Well, son of David was a well-known title for the Messiah. The Messiah that we're waiting for is the son of David, the great son of David. God had said to David that he would have a son who would sit on the throne forever. And that's the one that we were waiting for. And so now Matthew tells us that's the one. So we notice that Jesus' kingship is recognized as soon as he's born in chapter 2. But interestingly enough, it's not recognized by the Jews. It's recognized by some Gentiles who live far away. And this becomes a theme in the New Testament. If you go to John, well, don't go there now, but in John chapter 1, where it speaks of Christ being the Word, who was God, who came into the world and became flesh, it says he came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But to those who did receive him, he gave them the right to become children of God. Well, who are the ones who recognize him? Well, it's the wise men who are from the east. Now, a lot of traditions, a lot of legends, a lot of myths concerning these men. Who are they? Verse 1 says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem." That's all we know. This, what we just read, is all there is in the Bible about the wise men. That's it. That's it. Nothing else. So, what are their names? We don't know. Now, you may hear people mentioning names. You may see movies where names are mentioned, like Melchior and Caspar, and I don't know. What's the other? I don't know. Weird names that people have come up with. These are myths. It's not true. We don't know what their names were, and these names, someone came up with them centuries later. So we don't know the names of these people. How many were there? We don't know how many there were. Does it say three? No, it says wise men. That's what it says. We don't know how many there were. You say, well, why do we keep saying the three? It's because of the gifts. Because there are three gifts that are mentioned. So people say, well, there's three wise men. Of course, that doesn't mean that you could have 30 wise men and maybe 10 of them brought gold. You know, we don't know how many there were. I did read that there's an ancient tradition goes back to like 2nd century or something. It says there were 14 of them. So we don't know. We don't know how many they were. We don't know their names. Where are they from? East. That narrows it down. East of what? East of Israel. It's a lot of land east of Israel. So again, we don't know exactly even where they were from. There are two main candidates, two main options to where they were from. Most people say either from Persia or from Babylon. Why? Because of what they're called. They're called Mahi in the Greek. Now, a lot of translations don't know what to do with that word, and that's why you have wise men here. Some places they just transliterate and write Magi, Mahi. Now, in modern Greek, Magos means what? Like a wizard, a magician of some sort, okay? That's not necessarily what it meant 2,000 years ago. A Magos meant, it was a broader term for someone who has knowledge that your common person does not have. Okay, that's why you get magicians and all these things from that. But nonetheless, it's people who knew things that your common person did not know. And in ancient Persia and ancient Babylon, there were men who were called Mahi, who were into science and religions and astronomy and astrology and things like that. So I did hear that in Persia, interestingly enough, the Mahi from Persia were monotheistic, which is, I was like, wow, look at that. Anyhow, we don't know. We don't know exactly where they're from, probably Persia or Babylon. All right. And they're in Israel because they saw a star. The star, which they understood, means that the Messiah was born, the King of the Jews was born. What do we know about the star? Not much. Now, one thing that I constantly, or that you, especially around Christmas time, you'll see things on TV and you'll see things in the news where people try and figure out, try and give natural explanations to what this star was. And people will say, oh, the star was a comet. Or the star was Jupiter and Saturn aligning and it was super bright or whatever. All those are wrong. And we know all those are wrong because this is not a natural occurrence. Later on, we read that the star went over the house. And so they knew which house to go to. All right? Normal stars don't do that. Can you look at a star in the sky and say, well, that star is over that house? You can't do that. Okay? So this is a supernatural occurrence. It's not something natural that occurred. Okay? Also, let me point out, interestingly enough, that the star seems to have disappeared at some point because then it appears later and they get really happy when they see it. Okay, so it seems like they were over in the east, they saw the star, they headed off, but then they didn't have the star anymore, and then later they see the star again and it's somewhere over Bethlehem, so it's a supernatural star. All right, well, what do we know about these people? There's all kinds of stuff that we don't know. And all the extra things that you may hear are just myths, but what do we know? Here's what they say. The wise men, they come from the east to Jerusalem. In verse 2, they said, where is he who has been born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. They don't say, was there a king born? They say, where? We know there was a king born. Where is he? Okay? Now, how do they know that? I don't know. Text doesn't say. People come up with all kinds of theories. The biggest theory says that they figured out something from the book of Daniel, because Daniel lived in Babylon, and Daniel prophesied about the approximate time that the Messiah would come, but it doesn't talk about a star there or anything. We simply do not know, okay, how they knew these things. Also, let me point out, I'm just trying to get rid of all the myths now so we can see what the actual story is. Also, let me point out how often you see pictures of Jesus in the manger and the shepherds there and the wise men there. No, the wise men were not there on the night that Jesus was born. The shepherds were. The shepherds saw the angels, and the angels said, go into Bethlehem, because that's where the Messiah is born. And the shepherds went. The wise men were not there when Jesus was born. In verse 1, it says, after Jesus was born, they showed up. In verse 2, they say, where is he who has been born? So Jesus is already born at this point, and they show up in Jerusalem looking for him. Okay? They're like, King of the Jews is born. Where's the capital? Where does the king live? In Jerusalem. Let's go to Jerusalem. He should be somewhere there. Where is he? Okay? Not there. So when did they go see him? You may not care, but I find this fascinating. At least 40 days after Jesus was born. Let me tell you why. When a woman gave birth in Israel, the law required her after 40 days to go to the temple and offer a sacrifice, okay, for the child that she's just had. And the law said she is to offer a lamb as a sacrifice. And it said, if the person is dirt poor and cannot afford a lamb, then they give doves. Okay. Well, if these men had come early on and had given these extremely expensive gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, I'm pretty sure that Joseph and Mary would have money to get a lamb for the sacrifice. But when you read Luke chapter 2, when Mary takes Jesus to the temple, she offers doves, which means that they did not have money. So my guess is that the wise men had not arrived yet within the 40 days. And my guess is that when Herod decides to kill all the babies, and God says to Joseph, take your wife and the child and move to Egypt right now, they probably had a bunch of money then to move to a different country, because the wise men had arrived by that time. But anyhow, put all those aside. So they come. They say, where is the king? Where is the king? Where is the king who's been born? What are you talking about? The king is Herod. There's no king here. And he's not even... Where's the king of the Jews? Herod wasn't even Jewish. He was an Idumean. So we don't know. So verse 3 says, when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled. And all Jerusalem with him. Here's a man who's been king for 40 years up until this point. Awful man. Horrible man. Evil man. Here's a man who murdered two of his own sons because he didn't want them to be king. Okay? So he has no problem killing a stranger or killing the children. So he's troubled. He doesn't like the idea of a king being born here. What's going on? And it says all Jerusalem was troubled also. And I'm like, what are they troubled about? Well, I'll tell you. Well, my guess, what they're troubled about is if the king is troubled and the king is a maniac, when you have a maniac who's scared, you know what he's going to do. And their worries are not... unfounded. They're right to be worried. He's going to go and kill a bunch of little children after this. So it's not a small deal. So everyone is worried. Everyone is worried. Can I make a quick side note here? You don't mind. Quick side note here, because we're not going to get into where with the slaughter of the children in around Bethlehem. But I just wanted to make one point concerning that, because I read that the Greek Orthodox Church teaches that 14,000 little boys were killed. Now, that's not true. I'll tell you why it's not true. Bethlehem at that time was a village, probably had a few hundred people. And even if you add the surrounding regions, probably a couple of thousand people. Now, within a couple of the population of a couple of thousand, you don't have 14,000 little boys. Okay. Probably 20, 30 little boys. Okay. Now, that's not to say that that's not an awful thing that happened. What I'm saying was it was not 14,000. And what bothers me about that, when people make stuff up, is that unbelievers hear things like, Christians say, Christianity says that there are 14,000 little boys. But we know that can't be true, so Christianity is a bunch of rubbish. And you're like, no, Christianity is not a bunch of rubbish. It's not a bunch of myths. That's not what the Bible teaches. That's not what Christianity teaches. That's what the Greek Orthodox Church says, but it's not what the Bible says. Okay? So, there you go. Okay? Anyhow, that's just a side note. Back to the text. Verse 4. So, Herod is troubled because he's heard that there's a king who's born. And when he, Herod, had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. Interestingly enough, he understands very well that they are talking about the Christ, the Messiah here that is to be born. Verse 5. And he's not a Jew, so he obviously knows about the Messiah, but he doesn't know much about the Messiah. So he says, where's the Messiah supposed to be born? So they said, verse 5, they said, in Bethlehem of Judea. Everyone knows that. That's not a difficult question for a Jewish person. Everyone knows that the Messiah is to be born in Bethlehem. We all know that. Micah said so. It's written by the prophet, verse 6. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. All right, we all know that the Messiah is to be born in Bethlehem. Okay. Let me tell you something that I find fascinating here. I thought about this. These people come and they say, the Messiah has been born. Where's the Messiah to be born? And the chief priests and the scribes say, in Bethlehem. Okay? These are the chief priests, the top priests in Israel, and the scribes. The scribes are the people who made copies of the Bible, so they knew the Bible very well. They didn't have printing presses then. They would write it out. So the scribes are the people who make copies of the Bible. Okay? So these are all the Bible, these are all the people who know the Bible best. These are the religious leaders. Foreigners come. Where's the Messiah? He's supposed to be born. They say, oh, Bethlehem. Okay. And the religious leaders are like, all right, well, back to work. Back to what we were doing. They don't go. They don't go. It's not like Bethlehem is far away. Bethlehem is just a couple of miles away from Jerusalem. You get it, well, 5 or 6 miles away. You can get there in a couple of hours on foot. It's not far. They're like, oh, the Messiah is born in Bethlehem. All right. Oh, well. I find that fascinating that no one else went except them, except the wise man. They're not, all these chief priests, they're not hostile like Herod, who wants to have him killed. But they just, don't care. Don't care. A lot of people are like that. I don't hate Jesus. It just has no impact on my life. I don't care. Verse 7. Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared. That's so he knows how, up until what age he can kill the children. Verse 8. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the young child, and when you have found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also. Flat out lie, of course, but they don't know any better. Verse 9. When they had heard the king, they departed, and behold, it says behold there, because this is something amazing that happened. Look at this. The star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. So they didn't have the star, and all of a sudden it's back, and they're like, yes, all right. Verse 10, when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. That verse right there, it's pretty cool because it says they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. That's a quadruple joy right there. It could have said they rejoiced. Could have said they rejoiced with joy. Could have said they rejoiced with great joy. But it says they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. Yes. We've come a long way, and here's the star again, which they saw in the east. So they didn't have it. They saw it in the east. They came, and there it is again. Yes. It's over where the young child was. Notice, not a baby anymore. It's a young child. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child and Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. Notice they didn't worship them. They worshipped him. Mary and Jesus are there, and they worship Jesus. They don't say, oh, this is the mother. This is the mother of the king. This is the queen. This is the queen of heaven. No. They worship Jesus. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Expensive gifts. They found the one they were looking for, and they rejoiced, because this was their goal. This was their goal. In this text that we looked at, in verse 2 is the only place where we hear the wise men speak. And what is the goal of their travels? What was their plan? Why did they do this whole thing? Where is he who is born of the king, born king of the Jews? For we have seen a star in the east and have come to worship him. That's what they came for. They had one goal in mind: to worship Jesus. That's it. That's their mission statement right there. We have come to worship Jesus. They came a long way to worship Jesus. How much do you care about worshiping Jesus? I want you to think about this for a second. Get in the mindset of these men back in Persia or Babylon or wherever they are. You see a star. And however it is, you know that that means that King of Jews is born, the Messiah is born, and you need to go worship him. Okay? What would your family say? What would your friends say? I'm going to Israel to worship a baby who is born. You're going where? To Israel. To do what? To worship a baby. Jesus, the Messiah. Gotta go. How much is this going to cost? A lot, probably. Really? But I gotta go. I have to go worship Jesus. How long are you going to be gone? Months? Probably. But I gotta go. I have to go worship Jesus. What about your job? What about your family? What about little Belteshazzar's birthday party that we have in a couple of weeks? You're not going to be here. I have to go. I have to go worship Jesus. Doesn't mean that I don't love you. I'll be back, but I have to go worship Jesus. And they go. They head on. And along the way, star is gone. Well, they could have said, so much for that. We tried. Let's just go home. They said, nope, we're going to keep on going. Israel is far away, and we don't know where we're going. We'll find them. Okay? They get there. Where do we go now? I don't know. Go to Jerusalem. Ask there. They should know where the king is. Go to Jerusalem. Where's the king? There's no king. What do we do? Well, the Messiah is supposed to be born in Bethlehem. All right. Let's go to Bethlehem. See if we find him there. And the star appears. Okay. Yes. And the joy. And they find him. And they give him gifts. Expensive gifts. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They're giving gifts to a king. You're not going to give cheap gifts to a king. And they worship him. Do we care that much to travel half the world, spend so much money and so much time, so much effort, so much stress to worship Jesus? Do we have the kind of zeal that these wise men have about worshiping Jesus? Do we really care about worshiping Jesus? And you may say, Nico, you ask too much. You ask too much. Not everyone can do what these people are doing, okay? Look, I worship God. I worship Jesus. I go to church most of the time. It's not raining outside. And I even put money in the offering plate if I have any change left over. And I pray when I'm at home most nights, unless I fall asleep first. And I read my Bible if there's nothing better on TV. I'm good enough. I do enough worshiping of Jesus. Well, it's not the worst. Unbelievers don't do any worship. But it's good enough for the one who saved your soul. Remind of the book of Revelation where the Lord Jesus speaks to the church of Laodicea and he says, I wish you were hot or cold, but you're neither. You're just kind of lukewarm. You're kind of blah. You're not here or here. You're kind of meh. And so I'm going to vomit you out of my mouth. When the Lord first saved me, there were some sins in my life where I'm like, I got to stop those straight away. The two main things that I thought and I stopped immediately was lying and swearing, like not an oath, like VCS, like bad words. Not that I was the worst, not that I spoke the worst in the world, but there were things, you know, I could clean it up a bit. And I was like, look, if I'm going to be, because I wanted to tell everyone about Christ. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to be telling people about Christ, I can't be someone who speaks like that. So I need to clean that up. And I need, if I'm going to be representing him who is the truth, I can't be telling lies and stuff. So those were a couple of things that I just cut out immediately. There's other things that take more time. There's other things that take your entire life to struggling with and fighting against and things like that. And I get it. And slowly, slowly, you try, as the years go by as being a Christian, you try and clean yourself up. Get a bit better than you were. Be holier. Be less sinful. And I think what happens is this. We reach a point in our lives where we remember how we used to be. And we see how we are now. And we're way better now than what we used to be. And we're like, oh, that's good enough. That's good enough. I mean, it's hard fighting against sin. And it's hard to fight against the flesh and the world. And it's tiring. It's tiring to pray. Praying is not easy. To sit down and say, I'm going to pray. There's so many things in our life that we should be doing to worship God, which are difficult. And we're like, it's good enough. And we kind of stop trying. I remember Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount said, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. What we should do when we hear that statement should be, okay, I'm going to pray. I'm going to ask the Spirit to help me. I'm going to ask other believers to help me. And I know I'm going to fall flat on my face, but I have to get back up and ask God to forgive me and keep on striving and worship God as best as I can. But we don't do that. When we hear Jesus saying, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect, we say, oh, no one can do that, so never mind. Can't do that. I can't be perfect. Paul in Philippians 3 said, I'm not perfect, but I'm striving for it. I'm trying. How much do we care about worshiping God in our lives? I saw a quote I don't remember who it was, just a couple of weeks ago. It said, if you don't care about worship, then you're not ready to go to heaven. And I was like, wow, you're right. Why do you want to go to heaven? You know what heaven is? Worshiping God. That's what it is. Why do you want to go there? You know, most people, if you ask them, they say they want to go to heaven. But the only reason they want to go to heaven is because they don't like the alternative. They're like, well, if those are my only two options, I'd rather go to heaven. But what they would really prefer is to just stay here. Because do they want to go and be with Christ and worship Him forever? Is that what they really want, or they just not want to go to hell? Look. I'll close. Look. Romans 8 says, present your bodies as a living sacrifice to God, holy and acceptable. What does God want from us? It's not about, well, I went to church on Sunday morning. Well, I read my Bible. He wants all of you, your whole self. He says, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. We are to be a sacrifice to God, not to be killed. That's not what he's talking about. A living sacrifice. Holy. He wants us to live a holy life that is acceptable to him. We are to give ourselves, all of ourselves, to honor him. So that's all the only question I have. When you read about these wise men, think about what they were willing to give or give up or do because they wanted to worship Jesus. Do we have that kind of zeal, or are we just going with the flow? Let's pray.